Welcome to Between the Lines, an Oaks Church Brooklyn podcast where we go behind the scenes of our current series, The Story of God, alongside our pastors and a few friends. We hope you enjoy.
All right, we are back with your next installment of Between the Lines.
Here we are. I'm glad to be back. You know, it's good to be on rhythm. You know, we were there last week. We had a special guest, which was a big deal.
Oh, man, that was so much fun.
Not just us.
Yeah, and now it's back. But, you know, listen, it's good to remember where you came from, you know?
Back to basics.
That's it. And I'm here for that. Well, just to kind of ground ourselves, we are here today, but we won't be here next week.
Yeah? No. Yeah. We're starting our ramp up to Easter.
Yes. So Between the Lines are going to take a little hiatus for the next 3 weeks as we enter Teaching Wise at Oaks into a series called This Strange King.
Yeah. And it's going to be following, the strange King Jesus as he moves closer and closer to the most important event of history.
Yeah, a shepherd king, a king with a borrowed chariot and an empty throne room.
Yeah.
So very excited for that. But then we will jump back in. We'll have 6 weeks to wrap up with Exile.
Yeah, and we'll be hopping right into the story, kind of right into the book of Daniel, really, where we get this scene of all the influential and noble young men of Israel are kidnapped and taken to Babylon.
What a time. Really looking forward to that. So this does mean that this is our last Between the Lines until May. First week of May, we'll be back. We're back for 6 weeks, and then we'll take a break over the summer from the podcast, but not Between the Lines.
No. It's interesting. We acknowledged over and over again that we're doing this kind of narrative overview, this kind of big narrative beats in the story of God, which means we've had to skip over beloved classics.
Yeah. We didn't really do David and Goliath.
No. Yeah. And so that's what this series is going to be for the summer. We're going to just revisit some of the stories we missed as we've done this kind of large overarching story and get some of, like, you know, the little side quests, the little character episodes.
There we go. Yeah, a little retrospective as we've, you know, for all intents and purposes, we'll be done with the Old Testament. It's been a year and a half. Since we've started this thing. And so we'll spend this summer. The series will be Between the Lines, and each Sunday, our teachers will be going through some story we didn't cover and asking, how do we see and come to know the God between the lines, the God above all and in all and through all?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yes, I'm excited to listen to it after I get back, because I'm going to be on sabbatical.
True.
So holler at your boy. I will not be there, but from afar, I will be sending, you know, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of fun. Don't worry.
All right.
Speaking of not being there, I was waylaid with something on Sunday and was not in attendance. So, I mean, I figure you can catch our audience.
I thought it was an act of protest.
No, I was literally in bed and, sick. And so I figured you can catch me and our audience up about this past Sunday. And then also, like, what was left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, so, you know, picking up where you left us off, you kind of did this look forward, a little sneak peek, if you will, into Exile, and from that vantage point, looking back at Solomon and him becoming king over Adonijah. And where I picked up was actually with Solomon, but this kind of framing device with Solomon's kind of like chief, like, case, like if it was like an episode of Matlock, you know, like a Sherlock Holmes, like, how is he going to solve this problem?
Law and Order, Ancient Israel.
So we've got these two prostitute women, these two sex workers that are arguing over this baby. And you have one of them is the real mother. Mm-hmm. How could one tell? And in the midst of this argument, having Solomon decide, you know, what makes sense is let's cut the baby in half.
Yeah, that's fair.
yeah, of course, as you do. But in that mandate, the true mother rises and says, hey, you know, I would much rather my baby be in the hands of an unscrupulous woman than to be utterly annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
And so she can have the baby. And this, Solomon deduces, is the real mother. It's the tale of the real mother.
Yeah.
It's elementary,
my dear Watson.
And so we use that kind of device to really look at essentially how this played out. This played out on a national level.
Yeah.
Where you had these kind of two mothers, one being God, Yahweh, Elohim, the founder, the leader, the progenitor of Israel. And then you have these earthly kings.
Yeah.
Are these kind of like wayward mothers. And they have these two different relationships to this child.
Yeah.
And we bear out kind of who's the real mom and their actions. And we see through the actions of the earthly kings time and again, they don't really give any regard to the baby being split in half. Like literally when the nation gets carved into a northern and southern kingdom. But even more so being split in half spiritually, because this nation was founded on a promise and was birthed out of relationship, a covenant between God and his people. Mm-hmm. And yet, time and again, these kings, Solomon included, divide the people into their desires and away from the God that has founded and sustained them.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the overarching thing. We took it all the way through until exile, and there was kind of this interesting part as I was trying to, you know. There was this interesting part that I almost found myself getting a little caught up. I had to kind of like keep coming back and clarify myself, like in using this metaphor, because we're pointing to, we're revealing God, right?
Yeah.
As the true mother, the mm-hmm. one that's like, please don't cut my baby in half.
Yeah.
And yet there comes where we end is that God rises up these kings around Israel to come
and cut the baby
and
in
cut
half.
The baby in half.
Yeah.
But it's like, how, Sway?
Yeah. This is where the metaphor breaks down a little bit. You're like, oh, snap. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there we go. So it seemingly breaks down. But if we take this long view of understanding, that it's actually God placing this whole baby in the hands of other unfit mothers so that it can live.
Yeah.
Because he knows that he's going to eventually get his baby back.
Mm.
Part of that, you know, part of the things we talked about, and maybe if anything was left on the cutting room floor, I wish I could have had more time to go through the prophets, and we'll go through some of the prophets as we kind of get into their prophets of the exile. Remember, the prophet class were these people in Israel who were served as the voice of God, calling people back into alignment with the covenant, calling people back in alignment into relationship with Yahweh. And so you had people, you know, we talked about Elijah, we talked about Jeremiah, we talked about Isaiah, on Sunday, but I'd just be remiss. Like my personal favorite prophet is Micah.
Mm.
And I wish I could have spent more. The thing I love about, you know, Micah is he's just a down home dude. Like Isaiah is like a coastal elite. Like he works in DC. You know, Isaiah's like in the halls of Congress, like trying to do the Lord's work. And Micah is essentially kind of from like West Virginia, like, or you know, or like rural Virginia. He's like outside the seat of power.
Yeah. Country road, take me home.
Yes, that's exactly it. And so here comes this guy who's like, really in some ways would be a part of, I think, some of the voices in our own nation today. That's like you people in places of power, you people that are kind of detached from what it means to live an agrarian lifestyle. And, you know, Micah comes from a little place called Moresheth Gath.
Yeah.
He's a farmer. And, you know, there's even a part in the in his book where he talks about sending a thanks or like a tribute, kind of alluding to that his hometown may be divided or even like it's like many small towns today gone defunct.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just, this idea that here's this person on the outside of power, and he's consistently calling people back. He's got the judgment of a prophet, but he also has just such a level grace about him.
Yeah.
But Mike is just continually calling people to repent and to care about the vulnerable, you know, as a farmer, as one who has to practice the gleaning of the fields. So resources are already tight. And then he also, by law, has to leave his fields for the vulnerable and the marginal, the displaced and the foreigner among them. And so he's kind of like, man, I see, I'm living this life.
Yeah.
And you guys are so, you've become accustomed to greed and living for your own desires. And you have to turn from this. And so anyway, I just, Micah's my favorite prophet. You know, obviously Micah 6:8, this, what is, man, God has told you what is required of you.
You know,
love mercy, do justice, walk humbly with your God.
Yeah.
And I think Micah really epitomizes that. Anyway, do you have a favorite prophet?
Oh man, a favorite prophet. I mean, if we're going pre-exilic prophet, I think my favorite prophet's Jonah. Because
the
he's anti-prophet. Yeah, he's the anti-prophet.
That is so on brand.
Yeah, exactly. This is why I love him. He is a prophet who doesn't want to prophesy. And here's why I love him, because I think we can get caught up in this narrative, particularly about this particular nation, you know, that we've been in, and forget that God has a heart. The way that it can come across is that we can forget God has a heart for the other nations, that they're not just pawns and tools for Yahweh, but God actually has a heart to draw them in. And that's actually the whole crux of Jonah's story, is God wants to call the people of Nineveh, this pagan foreign city, he wants to call them to judgment, but so that he can be merciful to them.
Yeah.
And that's actually why Job doesn't want to do his job, because he knows that if they repent, God will turn his face towards them. And I think that's partly why I love him, because it also, there's something in Jonah that Jonah does not want to see his enemies saved.
He's so petty.
Yeah, he wants to keep the message from them, because he prefers to see them annihilated.
Yeah.
And I think, again, why he's a favorite of mine, and maybe even for this time for our nation and where we're at as a country, there is something about wanting to see your enemies annihilated, not redeemed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so funny, because it is like this, there's kind of this like, you know, like hating, but you love God, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, how do you hate? Because, like, other people would be like, I'm going to do bad things to you. And Jonah's not like, I'm going to do bad things to you. He's like, I'm not going to tell you about my gracious and faithful God.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's how I'm going
to
hurt you.
I'm going to keep it to myself. Yeah.
It's like, my God is so good. He's going to forgive you. And I don't want him to forgive you.
Exactly. And then there's something in that story about the nature of calling. And that, as someone who is a pastor, I think I feel like Jonah a lot. There's a lot of things I don't want to say, and I run away from saying it, and God's like, but ironically, the hard things you say will bring life to people.
Yeah, that's really good. The prophets, man.
I mean, at some point, we just need to do a whole discursus on the whole series on the prophets. And
yeah, I think it's true, because it's, and we'll definitely come back and visit these guys again, but just kind of this understanding of like how God is speaking. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of one of the things we discussed on Sunday too, was this sense of God has these multiple roles, right? So in using that metaphor of Solomon and these two mothers, God really is the mother, but is also the judge.
Yeah.
And as we kind of talked about where Jesus fits in all this, God is also the baby.
Yeah.
Jesus comes as the baby that gets cut in half.
Yeah.
Because he knows that he can handle it. He will come back. He will be resurrected.
Mm.
So that's, yeah. So that was a little bit about, you know, this past entry into the story.
And I think that kind of brings us, I think there was a lingering question that you told me you tackled a bit on Sunday, but maybe mm-hmm. deserves some fleshing out. And, you know, from what you told me about this past Sunday was, you know, there's something in this story where also the baby's also us.
Yes.
And God's desire to make us whole and bring us into wholeness. And the person asked, you know, how do we seek parts of us that God is yearning for that we haven't given yet? And, yeah, I'd love to hear how you tackled it on Sunday. And then, yeah, what do you feel you could add on to that?
Yeah, you know, I'd have to go back to remember exactly what I said. It was, you know, off the cuff. But essentially, though, is this concept and this idea of, you know, not having to seek parts of us, right? Mm. In the sense that, you know, I love Ray, our last guest, and if you're listening to this but haven't listened, maybe you skipped out on the interview part of last week. Just want to really encourage you to go, like, eat from that buffet. But I remember in a conversation with Ray, I was kind of making this. I was trying to make this point that, like, each of us carry the image of God, and I think I kind of use this like. I said something to the effect of, you know, we're each revealing a part of God. And I love my brother because he's like such a stickler for, you know, you're around smart people. The sign of a smart person is they care about, like, every word.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I loved him because I totally agree, but he just was like, oh, but wait, remember, like, God's never piecemeal.
Yeah.
Where the image of God exists, it is always in its fullness. And in that sense, it's like we are whole.
Yeah.
We quote unquote subdivide ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? But that's an illusion. It's how we're operating out of deceptions and delusions of a current age and time. This is why our war is not against, like, flesh and blood, but against, like, powers and principalities, mm-hmm. those stories and systems that you know, kind of like receiving a script, you know, mm-hmm. it's kind of like being in the MCU, like doing a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
You kind of, like, it tells you how to be and live and stuff like that. But we have these delusions that convince us that we're not whole people.
Mm.
And that we've got to work to gain our wholeness, or even in loving God, we are compiling more and more wholeness. But it's actually the inverse. It's actually, like, in God that we find, oh, you've always been whole.
Yeah.
You just haven't been living like it. So live in wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
No longer defined by what you have to do to gain your bread. You have all the bread you need to live because you have Christ,
mm-hmm.
and because you have a God who loves you. And so, like, that kind of idea of, like, oh, how do we seek out this stuff? It's like, I think it's taking notice of the places where we perceive fragmentation and then becoming curious about our wholeness in God in that place.
Mm.
And that's where we replace, you know, Paul says that they exchanged the truth for a lie in themselves. And we're kind of doing the inverse, where we see the lie of disintegration. I'm never going to be whole until I get married. I'm never going to be whole until I have a baby. I'm never going to be whole until I have enough money to safely retire. I'm never going to be whole until I own a house. Whatever it is, and all the anxieties that come from that place, it's one, awareness and recognition, and then an acknowledgement of that, and then finding in that place, like, oh, Lord, you've actually made – I'm actually already whole as a person, irrespective of my relational partner. And I could desire a partner, but desiring a partner and needing a partner are two very different things. And so how do I find that in Jesus, whatever I think that thing is going to fill – oh, there's that South Carolina in me – fill find that Jesus has that deeper thing. We have that deeper thing already in Jesus. So, I don't know. What about you? What do you take from all that?
Yeah.
Tribe?
No, I think that was great. I think there's something that arises for me is, you know, one of the one of the ways we can imagine the effects of Jesus's death and resurrection is as new vision, a new way of seeing, a new lens through which we look at the world.
Like that.
And Paul kind of uses him. He says, you know, he talks about seeing dimly or as though in a mirror. And there's like this dimness of sight that is just prevalent in the human condition as we experience now. We see ourselves dimly. We see ourselves as if through a veil. And part of what we get as we behold Christ, who is the truly whole one, the truly non-disintegrated one. Yeah. He is completely whole. Even the great irony is that, you know, in the wholeness of his new body, he bears with himself the scars. So even his scars have been integrated into his wholeness. We can't see ourselves the way we perceive the whole. We can see dimly, but it's by switching our eyesight. We behold Christ, and as we return to behold ourselves, the wholeness that is us becomes a little clearer. And it's that relationship between beholding the truly whole one and then beholding myself that I think slowly the veil is slowly torn away. And it's the journey of the lifetime, because it's only then will we see him face to face and we will be known and truly known. And so, yeah, I think there's like in this relationship of, you know, seeing ourselves as whole people, it's predicated on beholding a vision of wholeness that gives us the categories to see ourselves as whole.
All right, I want to incarnate this a little bit, right? Because like we're still dabbling in these like huge concepts, and I could imagine even as I listen to us, someone going like, "Okay, bros, but like." What does this look like, though? What the heck? How do you live out what you're even talking about? You know, I shared on Sunday kind of this a bit from my own story. I didn't go in particular detail, but I kind of talked about how, you know, one of the core questions of my life in early childhood and has, you know, persisted was this question of like, could I be loved? Could anyone who didn't have to love me and or desire me, which was really a reflection of my own lack of love and desire for myself, right? And so there's this perceived kind of disintegration. I only parts of me are lovable. And those are the parts that people bear responsibility for, my parents and whatnot. And so out of that like lack of this short perspective on my wholeness, you know, I become a follower in school, trying to get up in the wrong clubs. I also just become you know, academics was a thing. Like, you know, I took a lot of pride in my work, and I became like, I became that kid. You know, I skipped the 11th grade, was very proud of it. You know, always wanted to be kind of like the top of my class, but it also kind of like owned me, right? And then it would come out in weird ways. Like, I remember I would say for so long, I would talk about this book I was writing because it felt like that's what smart people do.
You work on and a book.
I was working on a book at like 18. Like, what do I even have to say? But I would tell people I was writing a book because I had opened up a Google Word, not even Google Word, the Google Word didn't exist. I opened up a Word document and I'd put my name on it and I put like a title of a book. And that counted as writing a book.
It's the first step.
And I just wanted people to love me. And I thought that's what they would do if they like could gain some kind of like envy for my smarts and whatnot. But that also then just made me a person who was all full of show but no substance. I was content to just talk about this fictional book because my name was on a Word document. And I actually never even considered if I had anything worth saying or writing. You know, it wasn't, that wasn't the point. But it was like, okay, you know how you deal with those people. It was like, cool. And so for me, that was just kind of like when I came into years and years later, came into a sense of wholeness in the Lord, my understanding of my wholeness. Like, I can and am loved and desired, and am a desirable creature. And I also have learned and am growing and learning to love and desire myself.
Yeah.
I didn't need to put on airs. And now I can actually talk about how I'm so far away from writing a book. Because
yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I know I say this in the presence of a, you know, multiple published author. So, and I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
What about you? Could you give the people, what does this look like in your life?
Yeah. So what I mentioned before, this kind of this beholding Christ, beholding yourself, beholding Christ, beholding yourself. You know, what I didn't say was like there's a confrontation that happens there that can be overwhelming. And this is why Thomas Merton, he talks a bit about the false self, and he says there's the veil that we see ourselves through is that false self, the self we kind of cobble together mm-hmm. to make sense of our world. And he says we're really terrible at recognizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me in my life, what has been happening recently is in being a new father, is that as I've beheld Christ in my time with God, and then returned to looking at myself in my daily life, there is nothing more revealing of the false self than being a father into a newborn. And I think what has constantly happened is like I have this picture of myself. Yeah, I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm kind and I'm humble and I'm patient mm-hmm. and all. Yeah, Ryan, you're doing great. And then I come away from myself and behold Christ. And then I come back to my life, and then. And when I come back to my life, I'm holding this crying child. And in my heart, I'm saying, would you just be quiet? Would you just stop? This is a baby we're talking about.
Go to sleep.
Exactly. And I'm just like, oh, I am not as patient as I thought I was. Now, I could have persisted in the illusion of patience that I put on publicly. But it's beholding Christ. I come to my real life and say, oh, I'm not patient like Christ patient with me,
mm-hmm.
with this child. And so but that only happens because of there's this ongoing relationship with the wholeness that is Christ. And then just he confronts me with how illusory my own sense of self is. And the fractures that I see are me desperately trying to hold myself together by creating this illusion of self. Like, yeah, I am patient. Yeah, I'm long-suffering. Yeah, I'm all these good things. And then he radically comes and just pulls away. Like, no, you're not. Look mm-hmm. at yourself for real. And actually, that's the first step in, like, seeing yourself as whole, is looking at yourself for real.
Mm-hmm. Awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These places where everything's anxieties, but then Christ has given you perspective, because you are gaining perspective on what matters.
Yeah.
It is making you more patient.
And that's actually the positive sense, is that in beholding Christ, I realize, oh, what is true about Christ can also be true of me.
Yeah.
So the wholeness of patience I see. And I actually, that somewhere in this mortal body exists that, because I'm filled with the Spirit of God.
That's it.
And now I just have to move past my own perception of myself to get to it.
Well, and the Spirit does that, right?
Right, like, exactly.
That's what Paul says in Ephesians, that it is the Spirit who both gives us the will and the desire to do the good things, to live in wholeness.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got to start to land this plane. I wonder, as you kind of look back just this last season and chapter between the lines, are there any final reflections, anything you kind of want to like name or say?
Yeah, I think a final reflection, it's more of something I've noticed and something to hold on to. As we've gone through this series, and especially this section, a lot of questions have arose in relation to the politics and the state of our country and things like that.
Yeah.
And I just name that because, you know, for many of us, we were raised to think of the Bible as this kind of esoteric spiritual book that speaks about the state of my soul. And yet, as a community, we're coming to these texts and we're seeing, like, this may have implications for how I engage with the world. Now, the question is how?
Yeah.
And what is it saying about those things? But I think there's just a grace to notice that. Like, the Bible is earthy and it cares about the ordering of our lives, because the ordering of our lives is the ordering of our souls.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I just named that as a reflection. As a community, this has come up for us. And now the question is, what will we do with it? And I think we have some cool stuff down the line.
Yes.
That will speak to some of that.
Yes, no spoilers. No, I like that. Yeah, I think kind of adjacent to what you're saying is, as I kind of reflect on, you know, we're wrapping up the Old Testament, you know, and each week when I've taught, like, we kind of end on this question, which is, where is Jesus, you know? And, you know, oftentimes we have made this dichotomy, like, oh, there's like this vengeful, like crazy God of the Old Testament. And then there's like, you know, the Land's End, yeah. humble, like, this, yeah, L.L. Bean Jesus, you know, like carrying a lamb and like preaching fair trade, the gospel of fair trade.
Yeah.
And they seem so distinct, but for me, I've seen just such a persistent consistency in the character and positioning of God, which has been like, man, people are so chaotic and y'all hurt me so much, but I'm going to just keep showing up.
Yeah.
And also, I'm going to let you walk in your division. I'm going to let you experience your consequences, but so that you can just see that there's another way that, yeah. like, will you ever just get tired? Will you ever just get tired of living this fragmented way?
Mm-hmm.
And let me show you how to live holy. And so, yeah, I've just, you know, for myself, and I hope for those who've been tracking with us and our community, that maybe that gap is closing on this perception. And obviously later this year, when we get into the incarnation, when God comes fully into it, it's been kind of interesting doing this as a story of God. And God's been kind of like this like elusive like character who's like in and around.
Mm-hmm.
But come, you know, this fall, God steps into the narrative and like picks up a microphone directly.
Yeah.
And that's going to be really fun to sit with and explore. So, yeah, I think from that reflection, I just kind of say and invite that I hope what's happening for our community and for those tracking with us is this invitation into relationship.
Yeah.
And a recognition that, like, yeah, the Bible is not concerning itself with trying to reveal the right rules to live by in 2025, because the Bible doesn't know anything about AI.
Yeah.
But what the Bible is trying to give us is a revelation of a transcendent God that is timeless, that God stands outside of time, outside of gender, outside of geography, outside of the borders we create and the wars we hold and the needs we have. There's a God that is above all things, even our accidents and our mistakes. And like that God, if we can enter into relationship not with a set of rules that are going to become outdated, that are going to become culturally dependent, but if we can order and anchor ourselves around the presence, the revelation of God, then we become ourselves people able to live and exist in any time, space, culture, or place.
Yeah, that's good.
You got a resource for us?
No. I totally forgot to prepare one.
No, that's fine. I have one. It's kind of a, you know, if you listen to that great interview last week, I'm going to point you to Raymond's book, Theology in the Mode of Monk. Definitely going to tell you to go get that. But what I really love is that the people have chosen just came out with a new little series.
Yeah.
About David.
The House of David. Yeah,
House of David. So it's on Netflix. And so, you know what? Like, maybe go just like this week, get ready as we move towards Easter and the Shepherd King, right? This is Micah. I love Micah, one of Micah's chief calling is that he says to Bethlehem Ephrath, there's going to be one who also comes out of a small village like myself, but their pastoral community, Bethlehem, there's going to be one who's going to come out and who's going to provide, who's going to make me whole.
That's great.
And so check in on that, and then we'll be back.
We'll see you after Easter.
To the lines.